the site for those who, we have some new people. We have the site experiencethebigbook.org. I'm not sending out the links anymore. People know where the site is. I put up a new podcast 2 to 3 times a week. Every other day or so, I put up last Sunday's today. before we go any further, I'm going to ask God. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, the book, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen.
Amen.
Yesterday we had a great meeting. We just did one paragraph. We did the third step prayer. And we talked about what's required before you. It says we are now at step 3 in the prayer. And we reviewed what's required for you to get to that point to say the prayer. We talked about surrender, and it was really good. Had a great discussion. Wednesday night, we are starting on Bill's story. We're at 3 different parts of the book. We did the problem. We did Bill getting ready to die. And we had a good crowd. We had a lot of new people. And I hope they realize that he survived 36 more years. and this did work, but we read the first 7 pages of Bill's story. This Wednesday, we're going to look at where Bill takes the first step and where Bill has the hand of God working in his life so that we're here today. And it is a miracle. And so if you can join us Wednesday night at 7:30. And tonight we're on to wives. And next Saturday, we're going to start on the introduction to the 4-step and what the 4-step's all about. So if you're new, it might be a good thing to come and listen and learn about the directions to recovery. I didn't do to wise for the first 9 years. We would finish working with others, and then I'd go to a vision for you. And because I decided that to wives and the employers and the family afterwards weren't important because Joe and Charlie said they weren't. But I think Joe and Charlie said they weren't because they didn't have time in their weekend study to do those chapters. And so Mark said to me, well, why don't we do those? And I didn't have a good answer. And I said, well, I had an old idea that was wrong. And I mean, I've studied the chapters, but I never did them at the meetings. And so we've done them a couple times now, and they're powerful. The spiritual principles, the 12 steps says, having had a spiritual awakening is the result of the step, right? We carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and we practice the principles in all of our affairs. And these 3 chapters, they're called the lost chapters by some people, are how you practice the spiritual principles, how you practice them at home, with those you work with the world. And last week we started to wives. We're on page, the chapter starts on 104. And I just posted last week's so if you get on the site, if you weren't here, you can listen to it. And to wives, to me, is really to alcoholics. It's written by an alcoholic. That's why a lot of people don't like the chapter. But a non-alcoholic could not have written this chapter. This chapter had to be written by an alcoholic. It was written by Bill W. Because it really describes us and our thinking and how it's seen by the people around us. So I titled last week's The Description of the Alcoholic and How People See Us. And tonight, we're going to start on page 106. The last slide I covered last week was at the bottom of 105. It says, there was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. An armored car could not have brought the pay envelopes home. Yeah. Now, the one thing about this chapter is that it was written in 1938. It was a different world. People didn't get divorced. People had very little money. The country had gone through a terrible depression. A lot of people didn't have jobs. There was no TV. There was no a lot of people didn't have telephones. It was a different world. People stuck together. They stuck with. There was no place for the wives to go or to throw the husbands out. There wasn't options. And I was thinking today, when we have a lot of new people come in, a lot of people have lost their families when they come in here, because it's a different world. And I was going to pick up on page 107. The other few paragraphs have some good stuff, but it's I want to pick up on 107, and it says, under these conditions, we naturally made mistakes. Now, the conditions they're describing are living with an alcoholic. And so what were their mistakes? Well, the mistakes that we all make, and especially the other way you can look at this chapter, too, is if you're sponsoring somebody, how they look to you, how it is to relate to them. What's the mistake we make is that we think we can change them, that we think we had some kind of power to get them to stop what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And some of them rose out of ignorance of alcoholism. And remember, before this book was written, people didn't understand alcoholism. In fact, it wasn't till Bill W. talked to Dr. Bob that Dr. Bob understood what it was to be an alcoholic. He knew he drank too much. He knew his life was a mess. But he didn't understand that he had no power to keep from taking the first drink. He thought he was just a weak-willed, sinful person. And he didn't understand his powerlessness, the obsession of his mind. And so Bill W. was told the two things that make up an alcoholic by Dr. Silkworth in 1934. And Dr. Silkworth, in Dr.'s opinion, what he told Bill was that Bill has an allergy of his body, that if he puts alcohol in it, he cannot stop drinking. Anybody relate to that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So people didn't understand that, and they just thought we were really stupid. And we're stupid because we couldn't stop drinking. Then the other thing that bothered people about us is that we would have bad things happen when we drank, and then we'd swear we're never going to drink again. Anybody ever do that? Mm-hmm. Never going to have another drink. Yeah. Ridiculous. And then we would do it. And he explained that we seek the ease and comfort of alcohol, that our mind's damaged and we can't live sober in the world. We don't like the way we feel. And our mind seeks alcohol as a solution. And when we do that, nothing can come between us and that drink. Our thinking cannot keep us from taking the first drink. Willpower won't work. Once our mind tells me that I need a drink, I'm not going to say, no, bad idea. I'm an alcoholic. Now, recovery is when you're recovered is when you can say, bad idea. I'm not going to drink today. And so that's what they meant when they said they were recovered from alcohol. It says the story of 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. I don't have a hopeless condition of mind and body today because I can say no to alcohol right now. I know it's a bad idea. But at some point, that can change if I stop doing the steps and if I don't have a relationship with God. So I got off track there. Let's get back to the book. But that's what alcoholism, they didn't understand the problem. So I wrote, do you understand your problem? Yes. I think one of the reasons few people make it anymore is they don't know what their problem is. And they don't take the first step. They think the first step, but they don't take it. They intellectually take it, but they don't take it in here. They don't understand. They're powerless. They're screwed without God. It said, sometimes we sense dimly that we're dealing with sick men. Had we fully understood the nature of the alcohol illness, we might have behaved differently, might have been more loving and tolerant, more understanding. How could men who love their wives and children be so unthinking, so callous, so cruel? It's a good question, isn't it? It says there could be no love in such persons. True. And why don't we have any love in such persons? Because God is love. And when we're alcoholic and we're separated from God, we don't have God in our lives. and we don't have God's love working in our lives. And I really think the more you read this chapter, you see so much about our disease. Just as we were convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolves and new attention. Everybody loves the fresh resolves, right? We read how Bill wrote in the Bible he's never going to drink again. His wife was just euphoric, and that lasted 3 days. Asked why they commenced to drink again, they would reply with some silly excuse or none. And it is, it's hard for people to describe when they come back why they took the first drink. It's baffling, it's heartbreaking. But the reason we take the first drink is we can't live sober. We can't live sober in the world. Alcoholism is a disease of sobriety. It exists when you're sober. When you drink, you just have the effect of alcohol. But alcoholism is a disease of people who are living sober without God and are self-centered, and they can't manage their lives, and they don't like the way they feel, and alcohol becomes their solution. It says, when drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had built around them. Well, we build that wall around us so people can't get through, right? And even if they did not love their families, how could they be so blind about themselves? Well, a lot of people say, well, gee, I was an alcoholic for 30 years. Why did I come in here 30 years ago? Well, because we were blind to it. Remember, it says, the doctor says, it's the only life we knew. We couldn't differentiate the true from the false. What had become of my judgment, my common sense, my willpower? See, couldn't have judgment, I couldn't have common sense, and I couldn't have willpower. And what that is called powerless. Why could they not see that drink meant ruin to them? So if drink means ruin, anybody think that drinking again was a bad idea?
Yeah.
Right? So then why did we do it? Because we couldn't see it right before we drank. And why couldn't we do that? And this is where Joe and Charlie, when I heard this, that was like a hammer hitting me in the head. They said, right before you drink, the alcoholic can only see what alcohol is going to do for you, not to you.
Okay.
And when you see that, nothing can come between you and that drink. And the only thing that can come between me and that drink is God. Because then I can see the truth about what it's going to do to me. And why was it when these dangers pointed out that they agreed and then they got drunk immediately? There are some of the questions, you see how they're describing us? It's very baffling. And if the alcoholic who's new here can see this, then they'll understand that there is a hope for this, but they can't fix it. They can't fix it, but they can get the solution through the steps and a relationship with God. There's a power available to them, but their power won't fix it. It says, there are some questions which race through the mind of every woman who has an alcoholic husband. We hope this book has answered some of these questions. Well, if you notice, we read it tonight on page 60. It says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapters of the agnostic, and our personal ventures make clear three pertinent ideas. So they wrote 60 pages to get to these ideas. I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. I can't fix it. No human power can fix this. And God can and will if he sought. And you see, those are the questions that are answered by this book. And it says, perhaps your husband is living in the strange world of alcoholism where everything is distorted and exaggerated. Who distorts and exaggerates the world? I do. I create a world in my mind and it's not true. That's why in the fourth step, they say you have to tell someone your story in step five. And the story is this world that you lived in that wasn't true. Your resentments, your fears, your ideas, they weren't true. You believed them, but they really weren't true. You could see that he really does love you with his better self. So here's a question, what is your worst self? Well, my better self is myself without me running the show. So remember, it says we can use our willpower all we want as long as our will is related to God's will. So my better self is when I'm living in God's will, not Michael's will. Of course, there's such a thing as incompatibility, but in nearly every instance, the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and considerate. It's usually because he is warped and sickened that he says and does these appalling things. Anybody believe that this is true? It's true, isn't it? Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than ever before. I wrote, I hope so. Now, one thing about what we've just read is that we feel bad when we come in here, at least if you're normal, and you look back. But we're seeing now that we had no power to live differently. We had no power to live differently because we were running the show. And so that's how I could forgive myself. Even today, now that I'm retired, I have time to think more. It's kind of dangerous. And you can look back on your life and things that happened 30 or 35 years ago and decisions you made, and I realized I didn't have any different power. And why? Because I was the manager, and I had the wrong manager, and I don't have to live that way anymore. So people don't forgive themselves. That's a form of self-centeredness and self-pity, too. We couldn't do any differently than we did. I said to somebody, well, why didn't I do this sooner? Well, they said because it wasn't. You couldn't see till you could see, and you can't hear till you can hear. Didn't you tell me that, Gary? And so he's not sure. Try not to condemn your alcoholic husband no matter what he says or does. And we have to remember that, too. I think sometimes we talk about people keep relapsing like they're bad. They're not. They're alcoholics. They're not any different than I am. It's like a form of self-righteousness. You know, I'm sober 10 years. Look at that dumbass. He keeps relapsing. Well, hello, I'm an alcoholic too. The only reason I'm not there is because of God. And if I start to take credit for it, that I'm better than them, then I'm getting back at the self, and I'm getting in a really dangerous place. And the Bible talks about that too. That's basically, you know, without God, our sinful nature reigns. It says there is an important exception to the foregoing. They say when he angers you, remember that he is very ill, and that's page 6667. When it says when you have resentment, remember, and you're angry at somebody, you have to look at it from a different angle, and you have to say that these people are spiritually ill. And so how can you be angry at an alcoholic who's spiritually ill? That you have to have love and tolerance. So it says we ask God to give us love and tolerance and patience, right? We pray, God save us from being angry. Change how I see people. He said, but here's an exception to that. Some people are just bad intentioned, and some people use their temperament to use a chapter. This chapter is a club over your head. So some alcoholics like to use this to blame others. Have you ever heard of alcoholic blaming somebody else? Yeah, it says if he's one of these types, you better leave. You don't want to let him ruin your life and the lives of your children, especially when he has performed a way to stop his drinking and abuse if he really wants to pay the price. And what is the price? Bill W. in the chapter on page 12, he says this program is simple but not easy, right? Mm-hmm. A price has to be paid. Does anybody remember what it says? The destruction of what? Self-centeredness. It has to be destroyed. And that's the price we have to pay. And so here they talk about the problem with which people struggle when they deal with us. And they have four categories. So let's see what they say. One, your husband may only be a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Sometimes he's a source of embarrassment. I love this one. He is positive he could handle his liquor, that it does him no harm, that drinking is necessary in his business. We can rationalize almost anything. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. This world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. So how do you become a true alcoholic? You keep drinking. and you keep living your life self-centered. And at some point, you're going to lose two things. And they're going to talk about it in the next number two. So number one has not lost control and choice yet, but they're headed there. Two, your husband is showing lack of control. Remember, that's the lack of control. He has the allergy of the body. He's unable to stand the water wagon even when he wants to. Now, that could be choice as well. He gets entirely out of hand when he's drinking. He admits this is true, but I love this. This is why people die. But he's positive that he will do better. Mm-hmm. See, once we feel that we can do better, then we're never going to get defeated. And defeat is when I realized I couldn't do any better. I was done. I had done the best I could, and I couldn't do it. Anybody get to that point?
Yes.
Don't ever forget that moment. Don't ever forget that moment when you realized you just could not fix this thing. He has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. Remember, it says if you're a real alcoholic, you're going to try all these maneuvers, you know. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends. His behavior is affecting other people. His business may suffer somewhat. He's worried at times, so he's full of fear. And he's becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. Now, what is my nervousness? My nervousness is my living separated from God, full of fear. Anybody else have a lot of fear?
Yes.
Towards the end? He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts. It tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think. You see, this is the big problem for us. Once we start thinking, we're screwed. He begins to think once more how he can drink moderately the next time. Remember, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, remember? We think this person is in danger. He is in real danger. He has the earmarks of a real alcoholic. He has lost the power of choice and the power of control. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to want to stop. Now that's what Dr. Bob told the Oxford group. Right before God sent Bill W. to him, he told them he wants to want to stop. And notice it's in italics. And Henrietta Seiberling and Lois Smith prayed to God that somebody would come to Dr. Bob because he was dying. And 3 weeks later, Henrietta Seiberling got a call at 9 o'clock at night from a man named Bill W. who wanted to work with an alcoholic. Did she know anybody? And then the next day he met Dr. Bob, you see. See how the hand of God, you get emotional when you think about it. Now here's husband number three. Each one's a little worse, by the way. This husband has gone much further than husband number two. Now you see, the interesting thing today is, when do the wives give up on the husbands? See, a lot give up on number one. A lot give up on number two. Number three is, a lot of them aren't married anymore. You see, but then in those days it was not something that was common. It was very uncommon to get divorced. It was a different world. Things were rough. It was rough in those days. This husband had gone much further than husband number two, though once like number two, he became worse. He's beginning to lose his friends. His home is a near wreck. He cannot work. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary rounds of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. Now, he admits he cannot drink like other people, but does not see why. He feels bad about it. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. That's the killer. That we're going to figure out. There are two things that kill us. One, we're trying to figure out how we can drink and not get into trouble. And then once we realize that's not happening, we try to figure out how we're going to keep from drinking. And we come up with all these schemes. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop but cannot. His case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. Now, why can you be hopeful for this? Because they wrote this book, and this is their testimony that they were like this. And they'd work these steps, and they had a spiritual awakening, and they had a power in their lives that could keep them from drinking. And it says in the foreword to the first edition, and remember there's only one edition, so the foreword to this book says, we are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless mind of condition, mind and body. To show precisely how we have recovered is the purpose of the book. And that's in italics. So we can be hopeful because they were hopeless. It's seemingly hopeless. But it's hopeless unless they're defeated and they give up and they want to work these steps. Now, husband four is in trouble. You may have a husband of whom you completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has had DTs. Now, when I was 24 and I was a junior medical student, we had a psych rotation, and we had Spring Grove Hospital in those days in Baltimore, Maryland, and it was a psychiatric institution, and it was all inpatient. All the schizophrenics were there. They had the alcoholic ward. So we went to the alcoholic ward, and they had 25 guys in the beds, and they were sitting around, and they were talking, a lot of them had been there before. And they said how, the guy said that most of them, there's a liquor store right outside the hospital. Most of them never make it past that liquor store. And I said to myself, these people are insane. You know, what did I do? I was 24. But it's insane when you look at it. They couldn't make it. And now here's the thing. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have them committed. Many of our husbands was just as far gone, yet they got well. Now, here's the real key thing about this paragraph. This book was written by these people. The people who wrote this book were in the asylums. They were in the sanitariums. They were dying. Remember the doctor's opinion. Remember Roland Hazard went to Carl Jung. He says, you're hopeless. You're hopeless without a spiritual change. And he went to the Oxford group, and he found the relationship with God, and he rescued Ebbie Thatcher from going to jail, and Ebbie Thatcher worked the steps for 60 days and went to Bill W., and we're here today. This book was written by people who were gone. They'd given up on him. In fact, the doctor says that the person who wrote this book was hopeless. He had considered him completely hopeless. In fact, he told Lois Wilson that your husband's going to die. He's going to die. And and Bill was listening to them outside the room. How's that for a conversation stopper? And yet they wrote this book. Now, if that isn't a testimony, I don't know what is. This was not written by people who were having a bad day. This was written by people who were dying. So let's go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. See, his life hasn't become completely unmanageable yet. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself. And it may be unmanageable, but it hasn't become unmanageable to him. He doesn't see it yet. That's the key. Other people see that our lives are unmanageable a long time before we do. So anyway, we'll just finish this paragraph and then we'll open it up. Perhaps you both like parties, which would be dull without liquor. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has advantages when reasonably used. Now, that's a very dangerous thought for an alcoholic. And remember, we laughed when Bill told his wife that he drank because it made him think better. It gave him more philosophical insight in how to run the businesses. And we said that was complete bullshit, remember? Now, I'm going to read in this next paragraph, which we're going to start with next week, there are three or four principles, and I just want to read it. The first, and these are the principles of dealing with us and living. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Now, don't we talk about that all the time? Anger is never justified, even though he becomes unbearable. Anybody in your life becomes unbearable. You should go without rancor, without bitterness. Patience and good temper are most necessary. Don't we talk about love and tolerance as our code?
Yeah.
And our next thought is you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. So we're going to pick up with 111 next next week, and we'll open it up. And I hope this was helpful. I always get a lot out of this information. Congratulations again to Jen. Any other birthdays? Anything? Their schedule over there.